Thanks for downloading an episode of the Yarra Elders Precious Memories Project. This project was produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia, with financial support from the City of Yarra. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, and we need your financial support to keep going. Go to 3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that this podcast may contain names, voices and images of deceased persons. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
The city lights are driving me crazy as I walk the lonely streets of old Fitzroy. How I wish that I was back there in the dream time, in the country where there's always peace and quiet. How I wish that I was back in the dream time.
Hear the didgeridoo. My name is Margie Thorpe. I'm here to talk about my grandmother. Her name was Edna Rose Clark. She came to Melbourne and she married a man named James Brown. So therefore her name was Edna Brown. My grandmother was born in Framlingham Aboriginal Reserve in 1916. And her mother was Mary Ann Lovett, who was the sister to the seven Lovett brothers that went to war in World War I. And her mother was Granny Lovett, Hannah Lovett. Her mother, Mary Ann Lovett, moved to Framlingham, married George Clark. Framlingham and Lake Conda were the Aboriginal reserves in the Western District Aboriginal settlements, where our people were rounded up and put on those missions and reserves in those days. So my grandmother, Edna, was born at Framlingham, and when she was, I think she was 16, she was forced off the reserve at Framlingham. They starved women of that age off the reserve because they refused to give them rations at the time. Of course, there wasn't very much food as it was. Her father was a woodsman, and they hunted rabbits and chopped wood to, you know, to maintain a lifestyle that was very hard and harsh in those days. So she was forced under the, I think it was the 1886 Half-Caste Act, she was forced off the Aboriginal Reserve at Framlingham to Melbourne, where she came to Fitzroy, and she was a domestic and worked for a doctor, I think, at that time, and worked as a domestic and a cleaner for most of her life. She was fortunate that she came to Fitzroy. They came to Fitzroy in those days. Her father came with her, so she wasn't totally alone as a young woman. Like many Aboriginal women, had to come on their own, which would have been very difficult for them in those days. She also came with her cousin, Bobby Lovett. They travelled by horse and cart to Melbourne, and they stayed and boarded with other Aboriginal families, which, you know, there weren't very many. The only people pretty much in Melbourne, in Fitzroy in those days, were the traditional owners, the people who were originally from here. But my grandmother was one of the first people who came from country areas forced into Melbourne because they were forced off those reserves, forced away from their family in those days.
Now Gertrude Street, it makes me feel so lonely. For the gum trees and the taste of porcupine.
So she came to Melbourne, and as I said, she married a non-Aboriginal man named James Brown, who was from a big family who lived in Collingwood and Fitzroy in those days. And they had a house in Kent Street, Fitzroy. That house was also, you know, a large enough house to take in other relatives and family who were forced into Melbourne in those days. My grandfather, James Brown, was a very well-respected man by the Aboriginal community, and because he was a white man, he was actually also advocated for Aboriginal people, and he was a rag and bone man, so he would go around collecting rags and bones and selling them to earn a living. So it was tough times in Fitzroy in those days. When my nan came to Melbourne, it was, you know, she was a young girl. She got married young. My mother was born in 1935, which was in the Depression. And people came to Fitzroy because it was pretty much a run-down, dilapidated suburb, slums in those days. So that was where the cheap accommodation was, and that was where our people came to. They were the days of Squizzy Taylor, and a lot of, you know, criminal activity also took place in those days. So Aboriginal people were very vulnerable coming in from country areas to Melbourne. I guess in those early days in Fitzroy, many families came to Melbourne and they formed their own community where they supported each other. They weren't lonely. They had each other to care about. In those days, I guess, were the times when the Communist Party, a lot of people joined the Communist Party because they were more understanding of Aboriginal people's plight in those days. So they joined the Communist Party and were involved in, you know, activities that happened around Fitzroy and Melbourne at that time. My mother was also in the days of Father Tucker and the Brotherhood of St Lawrence. And we're talking about Depression days when people certainly didn't have jobs and were lucky to, you know, have a meal on the table, let alone shoes on their feet and warm clothes to wear. But through the Brotherhood of St Lawrence, a lot of the children at the time got services from the Brotherhood of St Lawrence. You know, they were part of that early involvement, and that was what the Brotherhood did in those days, was provided support to those families around Fitzroy.
I see my brothers and my sisters here in Fitzroy, torn apart by government ways and city life. How I wish that I was back.
My grandmother was a very strong Aboriginal woman, very strong in her identity, very outspoken, a very honest, straightforward person. She came to Melbourne and had to leave her mother and her sisters, her two sisters, and her younger brother at home. Unfortunately, her older sister passed away with tuberculosis. Tuberculosis was very prevalent in Aboriginal communities in those days, and a lot of our people died as a result of tuberculosis, and that was caused by the conditions they lived in those cold places that they were forced into, away from their traditional lifestyle. She died of tuberculosis as a very young woman and left a number of children without a mother. Her mother, my great-grandmother, Granny, took in those children, of course, and my grandmother adopted the youngest child. So as a result of, you know, hardships that people face, children were also taken care of and looked after. And as they grew older, those children, they came to Melbourne and they lived with my grandmother and grandfather in Fitzroy. My great-grandmother passed away early. She died of an aneurysm at the age of 53. So obviously when she passed away, there were a lot of children who didn't have a home on the reserve, so they were forced to come to Melbourne. They were scattered amongst the relatives in the area. So it was very hard times, of course, but my grandmother made sure, my grandfather made sure that people, you know, had somewhere to come to and they had food, which was, you know, very important. Moving along to, I guess, you know, through the war and through, you know, the Depression times, where they survived in Fitzroy as a family, and they were very fortunate to be able to do so, because a lot of people didn't survive. A lot of people were affected by, you know, separation, removal of children, and being forced into major cities like Melbourne from their homelands. And as a result, you know, it was devastating for many of our people. You know, I always have been close to my grandmother, and she was a beautiful woman. She was took care of herself. She was, you know, enjoyed going out and socialising. And one of the main places where they used to go was to the Builder's Arms in Gertrude Street, because they only lived around the corner, and a lot of people lived in Gertrude Street in those days. And so I actually came down from the country and went to boarding school. And every Saturday in the late 60s, I used to go to my grandmother's house. So I used to go to the Builder's with her when she'd get ready at 6 o'clock, because, you know, in those days, closing hours were quite early. I came across many of my uncles and aunties and relatives that met and socialised there in those days. And I guess what I started to become aware of coming to Melbourne from the country myself, from Gippsland, was realising, you know, how hard it was for people to just to have warmth in their house, to have food, to have electricity. And I was fortunate in my early years. My father worked for the SEC. We didn't have to worry about electricity, for example. And, you know, he had a job and my mother worked as well. But we come to Melbourne and that was certainly not the case for people who lived in Melbourne. People struggle just to put food on the table for their children. There was also the situation where, you know, racism was pretty rife in those days. I remember family members being arrested on a regular occasion, being beaten up and raped in police stations, in Fitzroy Police Station. And becoming aware of this as a 15, 16-year-old was a shock to me. And as a result of that, so a lot of people drank. There was a situation where they were homeless and died as a result at very early ages. We came to know about this and, you know, the high death rates of our people in that time, that many of our people passed away at unacceptably young ages. My grandmother believed that our people have lived terrible lives, and one of the things that she wanted to do about that was to ensure that our people were buried as paupers in those days, which was like post holes in the ground with no name or nothing. So what she did was started raising money to bury people in a decent burial. So she started collecting money when people had passed away, and, you know, would collect money, you know, around the hotel and around the community whenever someone did pass away. And it grew to the point where she actually had a club going where people who were alcoholics would come and pay on a regular basis some contribution to their burial when the time came. And it was a realistic part of our life, you know, life and death. And she always maintained that we had our land taken off us to begin with, and she wanted to ensure that people at least had land to be buried in a proper way. Far away from the glow of city lights. Well, that went on to where she raised money, just not only from doing collections, she went on to having cabarets in the Collingwood Town Hall, which became, you know, the social event of the year. So she'd have numerous cabarets, and she'd recruit her family, us, myself and my mother and her nieces and nephews to, you know, make the food and do all the preparation and work and get the local band at the time, which is Hard Times, which is the first Aboriginal rock band in Melbourne, and also, you know, other country and western bands to play at these cabarets, and people paid to come in, and she raised money, you know, for a funeral fund so that when people passed away, they had a decent burial. She not only did that, she made partnerships with the undertakers. She was well known to those people, and so she would get discounts on coffins and work out arrangements so that people could pay that off or pay to make arrangements to pay for the burial of their loved ones. And so she was well known in that area. She actually went on, she wasn't satisfied that, and so in her later years she actually petitioned the government and wrote a letter to them saying that she wanted a plot of land where Aboriginal people could be buried, because she always went to Melbourne Cemetery and to the cemetery out in the northern suburbs out at Broadmeadows to have people buried there. But she eventually succeeded in getting some land set aside out at Gellibrand National Park, which is now Waroona Cemetery, which is the Aboriginal cemetery that she successfully got from the government, and people today still get buried out there. Beautiful place where our people are laid to rest in natural bushland, which is quite amazing. So she was a very strong advocate. She was a very strong supporter of my brother, Robbie Thorpe. She went to the High Court when he put an action into the High Court for genocide against Aboriginal people. She went with him as an elderly lady. She also went to Canberra and protested in 1988 with the bicentennial. and she ensured that she got there, and there's great photos of her with her headband and her crocheted blanket, red, black and yellow, and she was in the marches. She was very strong in her belief in Aboriginal rights. She was a wonderful community woman. She was a very wise woman when people did lose their family and were grieving. She was also very much a part of the establishment of the Victorian Aboriginal Health Service. At the very beginning, she actually started off with people dying and then evolved into an Aboriginal Health Service where people could start looking after themselves a little bit better. My grandmother was the cleaner of the health service. So she cleaned, and she was the tea lady, because she was always the tea lady. She was a tea lady for Tommy Hafey, actually, who was a famous Richmond football coach. And she was his tea lady for years and years. And when she retired, she came and was a tea lady for the Aboriginal Health Service. And it was always the biggest pot of teapot you ever seen, always on the boil, and people would come in there, and particularly people who were grieving would come there, and she would assist them in not only dealing with their grief, but also assisting them with, you know, burying their loved ones. And so she became a well-loved, well-recognised person with an identity in our community. A strong woman, straight out, didn't suffer fools, as they say. Had an amazing memory. She had the most amazing memory. She was very well loved by the Parkies, the people who then became the Parkies. She would always ensure that if people came and left clothes, she would make sure those clothes were cleaned and pressed and ready for anyone who came in who needed clean clothes. So she did that. She also worked alongside Aunty Sissy Smith, who was Aunty Sissy McGuinness as well, who was Bruce McGuinness's mother. Those ladies, those older Aboriginal ladies, were my inspiration in just not working for Aboriginal people, but believing that, you know, the struggle for Aboriginal people, that we had a right to a better standard of life. And without grandmothers like those, and we wouldn't have had the same values that we have today.
How I wish that I was back in the dream time. Hear the didgeridoo droning in the night, where the crobberies are seen by the firelight, far away from the glow of city lights. Is the city lights are driving me crazy as I walk the lonely streets of old Fitzroy. I know that someday I'll be called back to the dream time, where the white man's ways won't bother me no more.
You've been listening to an episode of the Yarra Elders Precious Memories Project, produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia. For more information and to listen to other episodes in this series, go to 3cr.org.au/Yarra Elders.